Leaning Toward Wisdom, episode 4002. Hey, welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell, coming to you from Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas. This is the second episode of the newly relaunched Leaning Toward Wisdom podcast. Today, you know, without the field, there aren't any champions. And besides that, all superheroes need a nemesis. We'll talk about it next. Welcome to another episode of Leaning Toward Wisdom. You will find us at leaningtowardwisdom.com. Thanks for listening. If this is your first time, then, you haven't missed much. That's the good news. All you got to do is go back and listen to 4001. Well, if you're interested in gadgets and that kind of stuff, let me briefly kind of tell you what happens here. I'm a middle-aged guy with a lot of experience, so it's kind of about that. The primary point here is to just kind of pass on stuff, and as we are all hopefully attempting to lean harder toward wisdom, that's kind of the point. What can we learn from life? Some observations, some riffing, and general wisdom talk. Without the field, there are no champions. You know, competition is a dirty word among a large number, especially of younger entrepreneurs. I'm going to confess to you, I don't get it. I don't get it at all. Now, I am no longer a young entrepreneur. And probably, well, growing up in retailing, where it's dog eat dog. And for years and years and years, I ran retail companies. And there is no love lost in the competition of retailing. When I was about 27 years old, I was courted by a very large retailer out of the West Coast. And during an interview, in fact, they flew me into DFW Airport. I didn't live here at the time. And the CEO asked me how I viewed merchandising. And in particular, he was asking, how did I feel about retail pricing? And it was a very obscure kind of a question. I just paused and let him talk until I could hopefully derive the meaning of the question. Well, I didn't know. And I just paused and I listened. And without even allowing me time for a response, you know, people that do this, they'll ask a question and then they go on and they, you know, they give you their point of view or whatever before they even let you respond. Well, that's kind of what happened here. And I think he probably understood that he was groping, to quote, make the question clear enough that I could have a clue. And he uttered this sentence, and I'm quoting because it is etched on my hard drive in my head. We want our competition to open the paper and choke on their coffee at how low our prices are. Again, I was 27, and at that point, I had over a decade of retailing expertise, and I had this keen awareness already of how to be profitable in retailing because, even at 27, this was probably my second or third rodeo. I knew that if you were not the low-cost leader, and by the way, to be a low-cost leader, there's a ton involved in that. The associated scope and scale kind of advantages that you think of when you think of Walmart, if you don't have those in place, it's a losing game. It's a losing game to try to be the low-cost leader unless you are the low-overhead leader, which is how Walmart obviously does it. And by the way, without answering his question, I just politely informed him after he got through telling me what their philosophy was. I just simply politely thanked him for flying me in for the meeting. They had flown in from another city. They had flown me in from another city. We met at the Admiral's Club in DFW Airport. I thanked him for the opportunity, but told him, I'm not your guy. And he said, well, we got some time before we catch our planes. So, you know, we'll visit. And that seemed curious to me. He never did. He didn't probe any further, which it wouldn't have helped. Within a few years, by the way, his company filed for bankruptcy protection. So there is that. You know, there are winners and there are losers in every area of life. Just pick the endeavor. Doesn't matter. You see it most vividly in sports, and those are normally the analogies that we use, because, well, we've got televised games, we've got televised golf matches, and these are events that have a beginning and an end, but they've got something infinitely more important than that. They have a scoreboard. We know who won. We know who lost. And some games, they come down to the wire. I mean, all you got to do is consider tournament basketball, whether it's professional or collegiate. You know what I mean? You can miss the whole game. And if you just watch the last 5 minutes, you know, then you get to catch. I mean, 5 minutes of the end of a basketball game can last seemingly an hour. Some games do that. They just come down to the wire. Other times it's okay, you know, a football game, it's like, okay, the first quarter, it's over already. It's over. I mean, the other team might as well stay inside at halftime. Championships, on the other hand, these normally are determined over a prolonged series of competitions. I mean, if we think back to Walmart's beginning was in the little town of Rogers, Arkansas, back in 1962. By 1980, they had reached the $1 billion mark. It was the fastest any company had reached that milestone, by the way. In 1983, the first Sam's Club was built in Midwest City, Oklahoma. It's up around Oklahoma City. In 1988, the first Walmart Supercenter opened, and that was this combination of general merchandise with a full-blown grocery store. And now Walmart is, if not the top, they are certainly toward the top of grocers in America. And so in 1990, Walmart was the champion. They were, in 1990, the number one retailer. Now, they started in Rogers, Arkansas with a single store in 1962. It took them 28 years. And during that time, they bested a whole lot of competition. And today, they're still battling hard. They are still the prominent retailer. They are still the prominent discount chain. They're still the prominent grocery chain. Because they know that in retailing, just like most every other kind of competition, champions don't last forever. All you got to do is study a company that you've never heard of called Corvettes with a K. Corvettes. Yeah, I was once a student of retailing. Champions need competition, though. And good champions need good competition, because if the competition is weak, then how strong is the championship? I mean, the championship is going to be considered weak as well. Already, I've heard some people in tennis talking about the men's and women's Wimbledon championship. I mean, here in 2013, in the early rounds, and it's over now, but in the early rounds of Wimbledon, many of the big name players, they got eliminated very early on. And a few commentators noted that the current champions, rather, had a path to the championship it may be unlikely that it could be replicated in the future. I mean, some things happened, and there is a, you know, there is something to the draw, that is where you're seated and who you have to compete against in order to advance, and that the current champs, they had the luxury of some of the big hitters in the sport getting knocked out early. I don't know about all that because I'm not a tennis expert, but I do conceptually, I understand it. If the field is weak, the champion just doesn't stand out quite as much. Because here's the fact. Champions need the field. If there is no field, if there is no competition, there can't be a champion. And if the field is weak, the champion is considered weak. And if the field is strong, then the champion is garnered to be all the greater. Win-win. Here's the definition. Of or being a situation in which the outcome benefits each of two often opposing groups. Guaranteeing a favorable outcome for everyone involved. I have no idea who first came up with that phrase, win-win. It was likely a politician. Well, it could have been a savvy negotiator. Whoever it was, I wouldn't trust them as far as I could throw them, because they have likely set the world record for duping people. Now, it's a pleasant thought. Win-win. Nobody loses. Everybody wins. The problem is it's a lie. No, it's not impossible for everybody to come out ahead in some single scenario. But here's the reality of it. We cannot all be champions. Now, some weeks ago, I'm a hockey fan. And some weeks ago, the Dallas Stars Hockey Club, they facilitated this trade with the Boston Bruins. The Dallas Stars have a brand new general manager, and these are the guys that are in charge of making trades and whatnot. And Jim Neal, N-I-L-L, he was hired away from Detroit. Great pedigree, and the man has already, I mean, in just weeks, the man has made a significant improvement in this hockey team. Well, he made a trade with the Boston Bruins, and both teams traded away some very skilled players in order to get from the other team some different skilled players. Hockey experts almost universally feel like each team did well and each team improved their roster. Okay, there are some people that feel like Dallas may end up with the better end of it if the main player involved, a guy by the name of Tyler Seguin, if he pans out, because he's only 21. And in Boston, he had a reputation of being a party animal, and everybody's kind of waiting to see, okay, is he going to settle down and really understand what being a pro hockey player is all about? Because if he does, watch out. Now, the point is, even in a situation like this where people feel like they may have a win-win, most people are going to believe, okay, well, somebody got a little better end of the deal. Somebody came out slightly ahead. It's a win-win, but somebody won a little more than the other guy. Because not everybody can have first place. I mean, that podium only has room for one team, one company, one person. You get the idea. Only one champion. Life is not fair. Life is not equal. Build a bridge and get over it. I'm guessing that it may have been about the same time, but I can't be sure. But somewhere along the way, the collective idiocy among us began to concentrate on little Johnny, on our kids. You know little Johnny. He needs to feel better about himself, and we need to boost little Johnny's self-esteem. It's really not right for little Johnny to play soccer or baseball or any other sport. In fact, it's not really right for little Johnny to participate in anything and not be rewarded, is it? I mean, he needs to have a prize because life is like Cracker Jacks. You know, I mean, all you have to do is just appear and there's your prize. Because life, that's what life does, right? Life rewards us all just because we breathe, just because we're existing, right? And we want little Johnny to understand that. Listen, we need to teach little Johnny that he can feel good even if he did finish last. Don't worry about it, little Johnny. You still get a trophy. You still get a medal, a medallion, a ribbon. Oh, don't worry, little Johnny. It doesn't matter that you made the worst grade in the class. Oh, don't worry, little Johnny, if you were the only kid that failed to learn whatever the subject was. You're disobeying your parents? Don't worry about it. Oh, you're breaking the law? Don't worry. Lying, cheating, stealing? Don't worry. Oh, little Johnny, here's your trophy. You did so well. You did so good. Parents line up, you know, lying like Rocky and Rosie, my two white West Highland Terriers that are, by the way, at my feet here inside the Yellow Studio, lying on the floor. Johnny can get soundly whipped. In fact, Johnny doesn't even have to make a good showing, you know, and we will still lavish him with praise because we need to teach him that in the real world, everybody wins. The problem is Johnny's going to grow up. Johnny's going to get slammed in the face with the reality that we've lied to him. And then he's going to wonder why we lied to him. Why the adults in his life lied to him. And if he's got a brain in his head, he's going to hate us for it. Well, if he's got any self-respect, and certainly he will have a lot of self-respect. He'll have tons of self-esteem because that's, after all, that's why we gave him all the trophies to begin with. Here's the deal. Here's the actual real deal. If everybody wins, nobody wins. Posed as a question, if everybody wins, does anybody really win? If the whole team, if both teams all get trophies, all get medallions, all get ribbons, who really won? Did anybody really win? No. No, because if everybody wins, then there is no winner. Everybody can be a loser, though. And there you go. That's the point of it all. To elevate losing to the status of winning so everybody can feel better about themselves. I encountered some new Discovery Channel show called Street Outlaws. Have you seen this show? It's about illegal street racing. Okay, well, is there any other kind? No. I mean, if it's street racing, it's illegal. This is street racing in Oklahoma City. City where I used to live, by the way. There's a top 10 list, and there is this race master who keeps track, and he coordinates it all, including handling, securing a place where they can go and conduct their illegal business. Guys on the list, 1 through 10, they can call out the guy ahead of them. And this race master, he will schedule these head-to-head challenges. The number 10 guy on the list, well, anybody can challenge him. Anybody who's not on the list, obviously. Now, these guys are serious. These guys are really serious street racers. These guys, I mean, you just look at their vehicles. They have invested thousands and thousands of dollars. So in one episode, the number two guy, he calls out the number one guy. It seems that the number one guy, he's been the top dog for about 3 years. And Mr. Number Two, he has worked for a long time to prepare to knock the champ off. He thinks it's time. It's time for us to have a new champ, and he thinks he's the guy. The first scheduled race can't happen because the champ, he's got some mechanical problem with his car. And according to the rules that these guys all live by, the number two guy, he can go ahead and assume the top spot because the champ can't show up. but he confronts the champ and he tells him, I don't want it like that. I want to beat you. Right? What a guy. You know, but I admired him for it. Now, he's an idiot for street racing, but at least he's got some principles. Oh, by the way, he's also got a wife and teenage daughters. He made a confession on one episode that he had invested in the last month. He had invested over $12,000 into this car. He had missed two house payments to do it. And I'm like, man, what a price to pay. Well, the second scheduled race, it can't happen either. Because now the champ, he's got a tire problem. So again, the number two guy, he's got a chance again. He can snag the top spot. He can be the champion. He doesn't even have to fire up his car. But he refuses. Is this making sense to you now? Mr. Number Two knew that being the champion was worthless unless he beat Mr. One. I mean, what good is the championship if somebody gives it to you? Or if you can get it without even firing up your car? If you want to be number one on this list of street racers in Oklahoma City and you get it, but you didn't get it because you beat the guy racing, what good is it? He knew that. And so at some point he expressed his desire to be the best, not by default, not by forfeiture, but by defeating the best. And there it is. There it is. If the top dog beats the number 10 guy, and the number 10 guy is Farm Truck, it's great. There's a link over in the show notes, by the way, to Farm Truck. So if the top guy, the number one guy, if he beats number 10, well, big deal. Big deal. He's number 10. You're number one. You ought to beat him. But that is not how champions are made. So number two finally races number one. And number two won. He ended the three-year reign of the existing champ. And after the race, he said, I'm going to enjoy this for as long as I've got it. And he also indicated that he was going to work like crazy to keep it. And that's what competition is all about. He could have had the championship 2 weeks earlier. He had two chances to take the championship by rule, but it would have come by forfeiture. It would not have come by beating the existing champ. And in his mind, well, in all of our minds, that's no way to win. It's about as unsatisfying as getting a trophy just because you showed up. Now, but before you go throwing rocks at me because you ignorantly think that my philosophy is win at all costs, then I want you to hang on because the field matters. The field matters. The champion on Street Outlaws, the champion in your rec softball league, the champion in your bowling league, the champion in your volleyball league, or anything else is determined by the strength of the competition. The competition matters. A weak player, a weak combatant can win a championship so long as the field is weaker. It takes something more to be champion when the field is strong. And so without all the guys under the champion, the Street Outlaw champion, he's just got nothing to brag about. Now, he may be fast as a blue blaze, but if the other guys are all wannabe speed racers and they don't have cars that can go fast or they don't know how to drive, okay, whoop-de-doo, you're champion against a bunch of slugs. We want the strongest field possible. We want to compete against the best. We want to win against the best. Because don't we all want to be a superhero? I mean, who would Batman be without Joker? Every superhero needs a nemesis. And the more clever and the more evil, the more sinister the nemesis, when the hero wins, he's even more super. And isn't that what we want to be? Sure we do. The website is leaningtowardwisdom.com. My name is Randy Cantrell. I'm coming to you from Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas, inside the Yellow Studio.